Omnibus is a production of iHeartRadio.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 307.DA0508, certificate number 32892, cursive.
So today we're going to have you try to do cursive writing.
It's a joke, right? I would rather be locked up in a cage with anacondas for an hour. No, I think it's a waste of time in school.
I don't want to use cursive in the future ever again.
It's creepy. Okay, cursive. No, okay.
I was just chatting with your cherubic daughter.
Yes.
Who is in the second grade, is that right?
Yes.
And I asked her, do you know cursive?
And she said, "She said, stranger danger. I'm not allowed to talk to grown-ups."
She said, "Who are you?
How did you get into my
get out of my room, Daddy? You said you wouldn't do this anymore." At her Montessori school, apparently, even in the second grade, the kids have to keep a journal in cursive.
She's been learning cursive and is really intrigued by it. A long time before I learned cursive. I didn't learn it in second grade, I don't think.
I think I started in second. I think maybe. Third is now standard, but she's obviously precocious.
Well, and she really digs it. We sit and write cursive letters to one another all the time.
I remember it was a real sign. When I learned cursive, it was a real sign of adulthood. Like, because they've taught you how to read and write, and yet the grown-ups are using a different fancy
way. Hieroglyphic.
What is going on? Like, they taught me this. They taught me a fake one. It's bait and switch.
Now, do you, as a grown-up, I don't want to jump ahead, but do you...
Let's do it.
Do you use cursive, or do you do what I do, which is a strange hodgepodge of cursive, printing, scratching? You know, like my handwriting is... It goes from... It's like those kids that I grew up with whose parents spoke German in the home, and they would, when they were talking to their parents, they would go from German to English seamlessly in the middle of a sentence.
Your handwriting is like a guy changing into a werewolf and back in a movie.
Over and over. So every word, I think, has like two cursive letters, a couple of printing letters.
It's like your password must include a number, two cursive letters. A
couple of backwards, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like you're alone or special or rare in this? Do you feel like most people don't do that?
No, I think it's the opposite. I would imagine that grown-ups most grown-ups do not use the cursive they learned in school.
59% of people, a vast majority of American adults, use a mix of printing, of manuscript writing, and cursive handwriting, like you do.
Would you describe 59% as a massive or overwhelming majority?
Well, it's an overwhelming plurality.
Okay.
Because, you know, what that means is there's like 11% of adults or something are using... You know, something under 20% of adults are using cursive exclusively, and something on the order of 20 to 25% are using
printing
exclusively.
So my mother learned cursive. She's left-handed, and she writes her cursive with a backwards slant.
As we have learned.
And
CF Trapper Keepers.
She writes in a sort of perfect cursive that if you find old homework assignments that she did in the 1940s, mm-hmm. Her handwriting is almost exactly the same. Whereas mine has morphed multiple times.
Can you still do
the cursive method exact, because I can still sit and write the exact cursive letters they taught me in second and third grade, because you had to just sit there and write R's over and over and over, and I can still do it.
I can do it also, and I love to do it. I'll sit sometimes and write a letter in my perfect fifth grade cursive handwriting, which was never perfect. But
it does not look like plausible at all handwriting when I do it.
No.
It looks like I'm a fifth grader, you know, like an elementary schooler when I do it.
And what I find is in writing that, especially if you write like a letter, your mind, you start to use fifth grade sort of phrases, or you start.
Like you call people gay? That's not cool, John.
I never did that in fifth grade. I was already very woke in fifth grade. No, but you start to kind of think like a fifth grader because the handwriting evokes it somehow.
You just start writing poop.
Yeah, well, I mean, I become more polite. I become the
you're deferential to adult authority.
It's more formal. I would use simpler words, and it's all in this kind of mechanical memory.
It is very the method, the hand motions that you would use to write in what's called the Palmer method, that kind of mid-century cursive that you and I learned, is very mechanical, and that's by design, as we shall see. And I think it's interesting that you think it changes your thinking to actually be more mechanical. Even as a kid, I was very skeptical about cursive, and I had to push back against teachers who were like, oh, you know, in the grown-up, the teachers were wrong about everything. The teachers were saying, what, you're going to have a calculator with you all the time? You better learn these times tables. Of course, I now do have a calculator all the time.
All the time.
On my phone.
Right.
And they would also say, well, people are going to laugh at you if you don't use cursive as an adult. And again, they were completely wrong. Nobody uses cursive as an adult.
My first name begins with a J, which and a lot of people may share this feeling, but a J is the worst cursive letter.
Incorrect. Capital Q. Do you know what the capital Q looks like in the Palmer method or in Dinelian? It's a big two. It's a big.
Oh yeah.
Because the top doesn't join like you would think a Q should.
Yeah, right.
It would be very easy for the top to join, but they were just like, nope, it's a big two, like a prank. But you're right. So I have to draw the capital J for Jennings.
Wait, oh, sure. Of course you do.
And it is not, you're right. It is not a lot of the capital letters in these, the main problem with cursive from an aesthetic standpoint is that the capitals are ugly.
They are. You know, like a capital G looks like an ampersand.
An S looks like a treble clef.
I mean, L is great because it looks like Laverne and Shirley.
The G looks nothing like a G. The G you see on General Mills products, the big blue cursive G. But if you showed that to anyone and said, what letter of the alphabet is this? It has nothing in common with a G. It's almost like a backwards G flopped left to right.
You know, the worst one is the capital Z. That is a ludicrous looking letter. Can you imagine if your name was Zephram or something? Yeah, I mean, you'd have to write that every time.
It's the little Z writ large. Like the regular Z looks just that dumb.
Yeah.
As well.
So what transformed my handwriting, or my signature, right? Which is the thing that we write the most often in cursive.
It's probably the only thing many Americans write in cursive.
What changed my life forever was that I started starting my signature with, and I don't want to give, this is like bad OPSEC,
This is going to let people.
People are like, oh, okay, I'm going to start forging his name in a different way. But I started doing a capital J, like a print J. And then starting my cursive handwriting from there.
I think that's extremely common for people to, because the little scrawl will just turn into a scrawl eventually.
Right.
The capitals are what make you. And again, cursive capitals look awful.
Yeah.
I think when I was a kid, it was like doing a lot of crossword puzzles. You know, some part of my...
What a Ken Jennings.
It's extremely on brand for me.
As a kid, doing a lot of crosswords.
Or doing the jumble next to Croc and Tank McNamara.
The other kids were out playing with bows and arrows, but I had crosswords.
I was indoors with my double cross stick. You really saw that there's applications that cursive fails for. And so when my teachers told me it's an adult world of cursive, I would be like, no, it's not. Adults do crossword puzzles,
right?
And they're not using weird. They're not putting weird cursive Z's in those blanks. In those squares. I've seen them.
Have you ever received a letter from an older person written in a cursive script you could not decode?
There have been different kinds of cursive scripts. Do you have a grandparent in mind or something?
There are a lot of letters in my family that, you know, they're boxes of old letters, and some of them are written in a cursive so elaborate that. you have to sit and just really piece together what each word is.
Well, let's get into this, because this is a lot of what is at the root of our cultural fears about cursive coming or going, is whether or not we will lose touch with the past if we use a different alphabet than our kids. And it's weird that we used a different alphabet than our kids ever, but setting that aside for a moment, there was a story in the paper not that long ago about a bunch of kids. I guess when you take the SAT test. SAT test?
Yes, SAT test.
The ATM machine? The SA test, as we call it. You know, you don't have to, you can write the essay in whatever you want. There's an essay section which you can print or write. But you have to put a statement saying that I did not cheat, I didn't get answers, I'm not part of some weird coast-to-coast thing where I called somebody on the Eastern Seaboard and got the answers to this 3 hours early and memorized the bubble filling letters in order.
Right.
Yeah. So you have to sign a statement and sign your name. And that part does say this must be in ink and it cannot be printed. Oh. This must be written. And so increasingly rooms full of kids were like looking around at each other nervously being like, this says it can't be written, but I haven't used cursive in years. I type everything.
Do kids learn cursive still? I guess my daughter is doing it. So
in 2010, cursive was left out of the Common Core.
Really?
Yes. And the rationale was the obvious one, typing.
Oh, wait, I've heard this. I feel like there have been Facebook threads where not in my backyard, like Generation X proto-yuppies have been yelling about the fact that cursive is no longer in curriculum.
Yeah.
Curricula.
Curricula. It becomes a generation gap and a culture, and a symptom of the culture war.
I feel like on that particular day, I wasn't sure what to be mad about. And I couldn't know whether to raise that flag or not. Maybe I was mad about something else that moment.
You didn't.
Some other Facebook thread or Twitter feed had enraged me.
The beauty of the internet is you can multitask. You can be like, I'm going to be mad about this in the background while I start up a new madness process right here with this new post.
I was mad at anti-vaxxers and didn't have time to be mad at anti-cursivers.
It's true that you're not going to die of measles because you don't know cursive. It's, so they it's just, a low urgency problem.
They took it out not because they felt like that there was something bad about it, just that it was superfluous in a world where everybody's typing with their thumbs.
That's right. You know, the whole reason cursive exists is because it's nominally a faster and more efficient way to write.
Faster.
So, and cursive predates English. I mean, the ancient Egyptians had a cursive script. That's why there's demotic Egyptian. It's a way of writing their symbols.
Demotic Egyptian is cursive?
It's a way to write their symbols with the letters joined up.
So we can just eliminate one third of the Rosetta Stone. It doesn't even need to be there.
Yeah, one third of the Rosetta Stone. You can
just like, come on.
You can wallpaper it. You can do a peachy folder and draw dicks on it. In English, there have been multiple ways of joining up writing. In the 19th century, from the middle of the 19th century to sometime in the 1920s, the dominant mode of cursive was what's called Spencerian writing, not named for the poet Edmund Spencer, but for some handwriting guru named Spencer. It's a very graceful, fluid, the shapes are all based on ovals, and you can immediately picture this if you think about the Ford Motor Company logo or a can of Coca-Cola.
It's beautiful, but it has an awful lot of filigree.
It has little curlicues. Imagine the C's of a Coca-Cola can.
So it doesn't seem faster, really, but certainly more fluid. Like putting pen to paper, you would feel like you were sort of ice skating across the page.
So you think it's pleasurable,
I guess,
in a way. And maybe it's better for your hand. I don't know. Like when you write, you do have to make a lot of jagged angles. And I guess the idea of Spencerian script is...
Well, this is what I mean about it activating something in your mind or your memory. If I'm writing an angry letter, you certainly write it differently than if you're writing a love letter. And I think that's
right in blood.
That Spencerian script would inspire one to more sort of posy.
It's for love letters.
Yeah. And for just like, dearest Agatha.
Can you imagine writing a letter of complaint in that beautiful script?
I like, say,
dear sir, Delta Airlines.
You have utterly failed again.
I had a window seat reserved last month.
I've written that letter so many times, but it's always like, Delta Airlines.
Typing has an angry sound, right? The sound of...
It's also like, Yeah, right. The angrier you are.
That's like vermin coming for you or something. You know, that's something in your crawl space.
I have found that when I'm typing with my thumbs on my phone some angry letter, the frustration of typing with your thumbs, typing quickly with your thumbs, adds to my fury.
Because you make mistakes that you have to back out of or autocorrect.
I had a window seat. And it increases the rage of the whole experience. Whereas if I had to dip my pen in an inkwell every three words, I feel like I would, by the end of it, I would have talked myself out of my rage. I would have been like, oh, I see. I'm sure it's very difficult for you.
Yeah, I feel like the rise of marijuana use and other drugs has been a result of not having any inkwell to chill us out, you know?
Although this is a common misconception that non-stoners have about being stoned. And stoners will promulgate this misconception, too.
I think they help perpetuate it.
Which is the same way that Seattleites talk about it raining here all the time, when in fact right now it's 84 degrees and hasn't rained in 6 weeks. Stoners talk about being stoned as being a state of chillness, but in fact it is a state of heightened anxiety.
It may vary by the stoner.
Well, and by the strain of pot, but weed produces a lot more anxiety than people are willing to admit.
So they need to go back to the inkwell.
That's what I'm saying. If you really want to chill. It's the
only reliable drug.
If you're just sitting and want to chill, brah, get your quill pen out. write a letter of congratulations to somebody.
I do not find quill pens. Maybe it's just I don't have the, I never learned. I do not find them stress reducing.
Really?
Because I spatter ink.
Oh.
And that's like a permanent problem.
But didn't you just say that you and your daughter Caitlin are lifelong patron of the show.
Whom we take pains to mention just as much as her brother, because I love them exactly the same.
Weren't you and she just monkeying around with some old calligraphy brushes?
We were, that's true. We mentioned this on Omnibus, I think. But we were drawing with them. We were not writing beautiful letters of complaint to Delta Airlines.
In kanji? That would be even better.
I'm sure they'd get somebody on the case to translate it right away. So let's talk in a second about some of the things you've mentioned that, you know, cursive might be better for speed. It might be better for thoughtfulness because these are arguments that got brought up and there's research on a lot of this stuff. But before we get to that, let's skip from the graceful ovals of Spenserian script to the kind of workmanlike, weirdly designed mid-century handwriting that you and I learned.
Right.
That is not Spenserian script. That is the Palmer method. And in fact, it was a shot across Spenserian script's bows.
Ha-ha!
When Palmer invented
En Garde,
his new script. The rationale for the Palmer method is pretty problematic now when you look at it. The idea, I think, was that Spenserian script was too pretty. It was a little suspect. Those Coca-Cola letters, a little light in the loafers.
Are you saying that this was part of a overall policy to combat homosexuality in the schools?
Maybe femininity.
But was that problematic, or was it an attempt to make it more class equal? Was the Spenserian script like a high class thing, and now we were making a sort of more equity?
Okay, yeah, it does democratize writing, but there's also kind of a dark side to that. The idea of democratizing writing was to assimilate immigrants better,
yes,
right, and to be able to reform delinquents.
I'd probably take it into Indian schools as part of a general process of like eradicating all other languages and ways of thinking.
Palmer's theory was that Spenserian was all wrong. It required hand motion, which was the word ergonomics probably didn't exist, but that it was ergonomically wrong that you would be writing with those oval swirls.
You know, it's a little masturbatory. This might have been part of a general project to keep kids from playing with themselves.
Pretty much every 19th century innovation, whether it's shredded wheat or the internal combustion engine, was all about, will this reduce masturbation or not? And clearly with shredded wheat, the answer is yes.
I'm afraid that in the long haul of history, masturbation wins again.
So the idea with the Palmer method was that it was muscular. It was for the new efficient, the new efficient industrial age, that you'd have a row of efficient clerks writing in unison, and they would not be doing this frilly thing with filigree with their hands.
I feel like this is absolutely demonstrating my point.
They would all be moving their forearm, you know, in unison.
Right. In a way to...
In a regimented way.
Put people on the moon one day.
Yes, exactly.
Like calculating rocket trajectories.
Our new business lords deserve this kind of efficiency from their little men. Because again, you know, printing is not widespread. You still need an army of clerks to write out a lot of stuff longhand.
And this is circa?
The Palmer method in the 1920s.
I see.
So typing and printing is like coming soon. The Palmer method is made obsolete very quickly by the availability of typewriters and printing. But
it's post Bartleby, right? He would have been Spencerian.
Yes, Bartleby would have been, but he wasn't writing anything famously.
Sure, of course.
His preferred script was
not to
script. So you have all this rhetoric about the Palmer method at this early 20th century time about what a powerful hygienic effect it would have on America's wayward youth if they could just make these simple muscular letter forms in their writing. There really was a sense that you could remold a generation if they would just do their R's and C's correctly. And it's not all that different from what we talked about on the Pledge of Allegiance shows, mm-hmm. where there was a lot of worry in the classroom about getting these kind of suspect kids, many of whom were now immigrants, in these bustling city classrooms to sit and do what they are told like we used to have to. There was even a patriotic angle to the idea of writing in cursive in the new American way, in the new American century.
Can you imagine what it would be like if kids still had to do what they were told?
Are you in favor of this?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I should be enraged about that today or not.
I mean, every single parent, you know, just dreams of, wait, what if I would just tell my kid, don't throw your stuff on the floor, the hamper is right there, and they actually did it.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I mean, it's like pornography for me to visualize that. I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be so great.
Well, now what's interesting is this period that you're talking about, the 1920s-ish, was just about, this is concurrent with the rise of the typewriter as a, I mean, the 1920s is the, typewriter was invented in the late 1800s, uh-huh. but it was only in the 20s that you had standardized it to the point that it was starting to become a useful business tool.
It was the day they put the percent sign over the five. Everyone was like, that's it.
I think weirdly, it was the invention of the shift key.
Oh, what would you have to do before? Did you have two separate keyboards?
I think it was you had to write all your capitals in Spencerian pen.
You just had to yell. You had to take the paper out, switch to a separate typewriter that had the lowercase letters, and start typing again.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. That seems like the type of thing I should know, but because, you know, as the resident expert on typewriters.
Do you own how many typewriters do you own, John Roderick?
I own 5 typewriters, including one that types in cursive.
That seems high. Yeah, I've seen those IBM Selectrics where you can put in the cursive font.
No, this is a manual, like a briefcase typewriter that you were meant to take on vacation when you went to Italy.
And you would
sit and write cursive love letters to your.
And look at the idea that a virtuous postcard home would have to be in cursive. That people would be offended if they got a typed letter, but if there was a certain slant or connectedness to the font, then the emotional effect and the social impact would be totally different.
It's strange how much the cursive typewriter accomplishes, like it. Makes the typing more elegant, but also weirdly impersonal.
I think it makes it look bad.
That it would be an attempt to make it seem more personal when in fact it's still typewritten.
I mean, one problem is the letters are still fixed width. So even, you know, if I was writing in cursive, a cursive W would be much wider than my cursive lowercase I.
I see.
Whereas these things, the typewriters can't do it. So the I is floating in a mass of weird kerning,
right.
Even though it's joined up to whatever is before and after it.
Weird kerning.
Oh, weird kerning.
Continuous problem.
I was going to say weird kerning was a band name, but it's really more like a blues musician, right?
Yeah.
Oh, blind weird kerning.
The thing about kerning is it is the bete noire of so many people. I'm sure futurelings listening to this program are probably divided into like 2 whole separate societies based on whether bad kerning affects them or not.
It's definitely I'm someone who is very attuned to typography, I think, but I feel like now it's just a world of kerning virtue signalers.
Yeah, there are a lot.
Who have learned that it's fun to complain about fonts or, you know, the grocer's apostrophe. Do you know what the grocer's apostrophe is? Whoa. That's like when it says carrots, but there's an apostrophe before the S.
You see that so much. That really does bother me.
It does seem like it's a slur against grocers, though. Like
Yeah, what the hell? Grocers are just regular people.
We couldn't call it the Irishman's apostrophe.
This is the problem with autocorrect. I sent a text today where when I looked at it after having sent it, they took away a necessary apostrophe as part of autocorrect. And
you looked illiterate.
You're just constantly looking dumb. You know, and then you have to send that follow-up text, which is like, here's the word I meant to send. And everybody knows what that is. I don't know. That has little to do with cursive, but everything to do with how difficult it is to communicate.
Little might be generous. I think you're right in that this was the dawn of typewriters. I think what happened here is that the Palmer method was a little closer to the turn of the century. You know,
I see.
Spencerian died out in the mid-20s, but it was because of this massive boom in the Palmer method taking over educational theory 10 years before.
And was it meant to also train the mind? I mean, is that part of the, because educational theories, as you know, consistently overreach.
Yes.
And so was it meant to create a more ordered thinking?
Yes. I think that's what, it's not just that these people will sit and do what they're told. They will want to, because we have trained their brains with this rigorous, slightly better designed, slightly uglier, but more efficient.
Everything turns to eugenics eventually.
Yeah.
That was one
and
of
then we can kill the people that can't do the backwards G.
Turn them into Soylent Green.
It's controversial at first because people are so invested in Spencerian. And of course, now there's decades of documents in a script that's now obsolete, so you can see the resistance. But it immediately catches on, as so often we see on the omnibus. World's fairs are to blame. The Palmer method wins the gold medal at two different World's Fairs, the 1915 Panama Pacific Exposition, and then some later sesquicentennial in Philadelphia.
The gold method, or I'm sorry, the gold medal of what?
That is an excellent question.
So the gold medal for agriculture?
Every World's Fair, it does make it seem like World's Fairs have a lot of discretion in what they give gold medals to.
Yes.
Because nobody held an event, right? Nobody was like, let's see if anybody will invent a new system of cursive at this World's Fair. Nope, didn't happen again.
I mean, every time you pick up a bottle of olive oil, there on the label, there's like
all the prizes.
Won the gold medal at the St. Louis Exposition.
When I was a kid, I was always mystified by the A1 bottle. Not only is it square, which is not correct for a condiment bottle, but it actually says, you know, it looks like a whiskey bottle, but it actually says like, boy, we won the 1888, you know, Order of Quality at the Baltimore Exposition.
Yeah, the most vinegar-like of all condiments.
They're really coasting
vinegar
on that
A1. Ketchup.
I mean, I realize now that it's an intentional old-timey look, that they're connoting some kind of age and stature with that. But at the time, I was just like, man, A1 is coasting. They haven't won anything since the 1890s. Anyway, so the World's Fair has put their dubious stamps of approval on the Palmer method. And that's more or less what we used. You would have learned cursive writing a few years earlier than me.
I started learning it, I guess, in 1975. And across the top of my classroom, there was a big banner.
Got to have the banner.
That had all of the cursive letters, you know, written across a 3-bar sort of musical notation.
The middle one's dotted
for
some reason, but it is.
You got to just, it's there, but you can't.
It's not as good as the other two. Don't get me wrong, but it has to be there.
You're just going across it. It's just there to let you know.
Some letters are going to cross it, like the T is going to cross it. We don't care.
But your lowercase d had better be under that mother.
The F will go above the dotted line and below the descender for some reason.
Well, that's fancy.
And we're just okay with that.
So now this is what's interesting about the Palmer method, because there are a lot of residual fancies, right? Like the capital G is pretty fancy, given
the capitals. The capitals still look fancy.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the Palmer method right now.
Is this an opportunity to say how much I don't like the lowercase r? I just feel like something else could have happened there.
The lowercase r is quite a bit better in the Palmer method than in Dinelian, which is an even more streamlined method of the Palmer method that I would have learned in the late 70s and early 80s.
You would have learned Dinelian?
Yeah. And so Dinelian is an even more, you know, an even more enlightened new educational theory to modify the Palmer method. We mostly think of the Dinelian today as having, as for its second alphabet. The Dinelian method comes with a second alphabet that is half writing, half printing. It's kind of like the letters are not joined up, but they mimic the strokes of cursive, the idea being that they make it an easier transition for students moving between writing and printing. Because, again,
you learned Dinelian.
And if you look at Dinelian, you can see that the Palmer Method R is actually a little bit better. The Palmer Method R looks kind of like an R because it doesn't go back to the floor.
Now,
whereas the Dinelian R looks like an N. It goes back to the floor.
Could it be that the difference in our ages? It is. Look at this. Dinelian was introduced in 1978.
So are we on different sides of the Dinelian apostrophe vibe?
So you would have learned Dinelian and I would have learned original Palmer.
This is why we don't get along, man. You're a Palmer kid in a Dinelian world.
Well, I can barely understand you even when you speak, but I absolutely learned Palmerian.
So well, look at the Dinelian R. It's even worse, I think, than what you would have learned.
It is. I don't like it.
The capital letters, I mean, to me, the Palmer capitals look very spaghetti-like.
Yeah,
they're all over the place. They're kind of sprawl all over the page.
They swirl around. There's a lot of, there's a lot of duplicated territory, right? You go up and then you come back down along the same line and you swirl over here and then you come back down along the same line.
It's the problem with cursive is you've got to get back to a starting point. Even if a letter would leave you somewhere weird, nope, cursive's got to get you back to the starting point for whatever the next letter is.
Right.
So weird new curly cues and what are called the monkey's tails of Dinelian.
Monkey's tails.
Have to be introduced. Yeah. I don't know if that's a cute thing for kids. But you got to get back to the line for the next letter to start, whether it makes the letter form look weird or not.
When you look at a word, when you look at a whole paragraph written in Palmer, I do find it very pleasing. But it might be that it's sentimental.
To me, it looks a little bit old timey and Mad Men-y. Like it looks like a Better Homes and Gardens ad.
Yeah.
And I like it more than Palmer, which to me just immediately takes me into a schoolhouse.
You're talking about Dinelian.
Sorry, Dinelian, which immediately kind of takes me into my own schoolhouse as a kid.
Yeah, Dinelian looks like
it's
primitive.
It's Spartan. It's functional only.
Yeah.
And they really don't care. Like those, I mean, the Palmer capitals at least have some grace, even if they're very weird and very loopy. These are so minimal as to be almost useless. Like they're in some uncanny valley between printing and writing where they look machined and they're not artistic at all.
Now I'm sorry because now I'm really fascinated by this. It's, you know, it's rare in the omnibus where you'll come up with a topic where I'm like, tell me more.
You don't know. Oh, is
usually,
it rare?
Usually I'm just like, how soon till I get in the bath?
You're with the listeners. It's like, when is Ken going to stop talking about dinosaur bones? The Dinelian system, by the way, named for Donald Neil Thurber, who decided he would name it after his middle name and his first initial. That's why the apostrophe is just made up. He
Dinelian.
Dinelian is short for Donald Neelian, I guess.
Did he
does look like an alien, like, you know, from Galaxy Quest or something. Look out for the Dinelian Alliance.
Did he do it because it was attractive to write the word Dinelian in Dinelian? Can you find an example of
I'm writing it right now. Let's
Dinelian
see. No, I mean, it looks awful because two capitals together, I mean, it really bothered me as a kid that you couldn't write in all caps anymore. Because I liked kind of maybe just coming from seeing engineering blueprints or something, like I knew that neat, orderly capitals looked really good.
Now,
and you just can't do it. And
I'm looking at your handwriting right now on a piece of paper where you have made some notes.
Are you a graphologist? Are you going to tell me I'm a liar or a glutton?
I do not need to look at your handwriting to know that you are both a liar and a glutton. No, but you write almost entirely in printing, and your letters are connected, but only out of necessity. And you write an awful lot in pure caps.
I almost always write in pure caps. So when you say you write in a mixed manuscript,
I do the thing where within a word, there's an awful lot of like, why is that a capital letter?
Like even if it's a double letter, you'll like, okay, it's a capital N and now it's a small N. Who cares?
But like the word something here, my M and E are connected cursive. My T and H are connected cursive, but I and G are all printed.
I'm not sure if podcasting is the right medium for us to be describing small samples of each other's handwriting.
But like,
this is fascinating.
Here's the word wonderful I've written, and O-N-D-E-R are all written in cursive connected. One, but W and full are printed. Seems like every Y.
You did. You turned into the Incredible Hulk in the middle of the word.
Roar.
You were Bill Bixby at the start and Lou Ferrigno at the end.
I guess we both would say that we write in a combination, but really we're, really our chicken scratch is mostly printed capitals. Like people.
Well, that's what happened in the SAT. These kids who didn't know what to do would end up just kind of writing their, I did not cheat on this SAT, sir. And then they would go back and kind of join up the letters with little lines, because that's, whoa, that's a high schooler who does not remember cursive. That's their impression of what cursive writing is. And the whole thing was bananas. This was always just based on tradition. When you think about it, it's pedagogically weird that you would take these kids who had just learned to write, and like a year or two later, you would be like, hey, what if there's a whole new system of letters? We'll put them above the chalkboard.
It's so true.
Just kidding. Now you have to do these.
Here's a harder kind of way to write.
And a weird, you mentioned your mom's very graceful handwriting. One weird side effect of how we've started to teach handwriting younger and younger is that women are believed to have better handwriting because women learn fine motor skills sooner. And so now that we do it in second and third grade, you have girls writing nice cursive and boys holding their pen the weird John Roderick way,
right?
Like a caveman writing awful cursive.
Girls writing very nice cursive, where, dotting their I's with little hearts.
Little hearts. Although I have to say my daughter does not. Like my daughter, you know, even though my kids learned very rudimentary cursive in the post-Common Core world, they still know that it's some sign, some entree into adult world.
Right.
So they, and that's how you mom and dad sign checks if they ever write a check.
Right.
So they still want to have a signature. So they'll sit and try to make cursive letters, but it's like watching when you watch something in animation and you can tell when it's been sent to the house in Korea to animate because all the typography suddenly turns weird. Like it's, you know, this alphabet is being written by someone who does not use the alphabet. That's my daughter's signature.
You saw my daughter's little note that said, I am excited-nervous.
Yes.
And it was written in a kind of cursive script.
The letters were not joined, but yeah, they were kind of
cursive,
flowy, Danielian-y letters. Yeah.
But so, Caitlin, your daughter is like proto-goth. She had better figure out some elaborate script as part of her like nascent goth culture.
I guess. Do you think that will still be a signifier? Like we associate it with romantics, but we're associating it with like Shelley and Keats.
Right.
Like those references are going to be 200 years out of date.
Do you remember all the goth girls in my experience all wrote with purple pens too. Like the ink was always a different and more morbid color.
The thing you and I have to grapple with is that writing does not exist for students in that way anymore. Wow. Like the purple pen is not an option because you are just typing your stuff into Google Docs. Kids are passing notes in class with Google Docs.
Not in my class.
Well, the teachers can't stop it because everything's collaborative now.
They can't make everybody put their phone in a Bastic?
My son will text me from class. But in most classes, at a certain level, everybody's got their laptops up and they're working together in Google Docs and they can just type each other notes and they can say awful things and there's no paper trail.
I just want this all to end. Can't we just get, when does the EMP wipe all this out?
As an angry dad, you are looking forward to the cataclysm. So there's been a lot of pushback to the vanishing of cursive because it really articulates this point in the culture war that the kids are wrong. The kids have lost some sign of class and fanciness from my era. And, you know, I don't want to say everybody who likes cursive is a Trump supporter, for example. It's not a particular movement.
Right.
But it does come from the same root cause that things were comfortable and pretty good when I was a kid and I learned this. But now the world seems changed and scary for reasons both real and illusory. And I don't like that. We need to get back.
As someone who struggled in writing, my handwriting was always criticized. My method was always criticized.
Like your cursive?
My cursive, the way I held the pencil. I was always being, I mean, I'm just old enough that, or I'm sorry, I'm just young enough that no one ever came by and hit me with a ruler. Right, like if I were 10 years older, I think they would have hit me with a ruler. As it was, they tried to be constructive, but I was always in trouble, and writing was painful for me.
Because you were holding your pencil wrong. Because
I
was
holding my pencil wrong. But I loved to write. I was motivated to write. And learning typing was a real gift to me.
The words could flow out of you in a way they couldn't before.
And, you know, the thing is, I took typing twice, and I got an F in typing both times. Because as soon as I learned the mechanics of typing, I would sit in the back of the class and just write. Just free write my own thoughts. And I was meant to be writing out of a book, like the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. And so at the end of every class, I was supposed to turn in this stuff. And I would turn in my...
You would turn in your...
just my fantasy stories.
Your poems about dragons.
You know, I used to sit and make lists like the 25 the rules of Roderickism that will be instituted when I ride into Paris at the head of a column of text.
And the teacher was like, this does not say cease the case of Charlie's cashews.
Does not.
30 times.
It does not. And so I swear to you, I got an F both times, but I loved it. I would go to typing just so thrilled and spend the whole class just... And we talked about this the other day. I mean, I can type about 60 words a minute, but you at one point said you could type 90 words a minute.
It doesn't sound plausible to me, but when I took a typing test to try to get a cushy office job on campus when I was in college, typing stuff up for professors, I got the job immediately because they were like, you beat 90 words a minute on the typing test.
Wow.
Which seems weird, but you know, if you grew up on an Apple II in your living room, as I did, you got good. And at first I was a very fast two-finger typist.
Right.
And finally I had Mrs. Wambacher settle me down in her typing class on an IBM Selectric and taught me where the home keys were. And I got even faster.
I mean, I'm a typist who just developed his own technique, like I'm sure is true for most people. Like my fingers.
Do you use your index fingers for every letter? Or do you actually?
No. Okay. I use all my fingers, but I don't have perfect technique.
I think there's one letter I still do wrong. It's either H or Y. I use the wrong hand, and Mrs. Wambacher could not ruler it out of me, I guess.
You know, Sean Nelson, our friend and singer of the band Harvey Danger, was the features editor for The Stranger for many years, and he would often write 20,000 words a week, you know, 20,000 words in an issue, 30,000 words. He was just writing like
he was Seattle's word fountain.
Yeah. He wrote the entire entertainment section, and he types with three fingers, like the index finger of one hand and the index finger and thumb of the other hand.
Is he fast?
He's incredibly fast. I mean, he just writes so much and so articulately, but he has this he could be grievously wounded in an industrial accident and it would not affect.
It would have to be the right seven fingers.
That's true.
He's going to have to be very careful. As cursive has become a cultural volleyball, the arguments have swung both ways on typing. You know, there's the speed argument that we always heard in school.
Right.
That cursive would be faster. Do you believe that's true? Cursive? I mean, it's certainly not faster than typing.
No.
Do you think it's faster than typewriting or than printing?
No, otherwise we would use it instead of this quick
if we're just
printing
lazy?
We do.
Here, right here. Let's stopwatch you.
All right. Quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. All right. What am I writing?
I'm going to say go, and you're going to ride the omnibus. Okay.
Okay. In cursive?
Let's do cursive first.
All right.
And you yell when you're done.
All right.
Ready, set, go.
I mean, it immediately dissolves into like blah, 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 blah.
But just write it like you were going to write.
Okay. All right.
Ready, set, go. Again, podcasting perfect for this. He's writing.
Done.
You just wrote the omnibus, but it took you 7 seconds.
Yeah.
7.1 seconds. Okay, now just write the omnibus.
Print it.
Print. Sorry. Ready, set, go.
Gun. Done-ish.
5.1. That's 2 seconds faster.
But the problem is that the second one is less intelligible.
Let me see.
Well, because I just... definitely things like omnibus.
But you didn't even... The bottom one's not really printed. I mean,
well, it's the only, I mean, I don't, it's, this is very hard to do.
Could you write in 10 discrete letters, the omnibus?
Okay. Let me do this again.
Right, ready, go. Set, go.
T-H. That
was your melded script.
Omnibus. Okay.
Okay. That's slightly faster, 6.6. But what you just found is that your mixed lettering, printed and writing, is faster than either.
But M-N-I-B... In my style of writing, it just dissolves into like blah, blah, blah.
You've invented a single letter for MNIB for all the words that have MNIB. It's like shorthand.
Well, it's
for just, all the words that have M-N-I-B.
I've become one of those adults order. Where my handwriting is really not legible except to me. That's not true. I suppose you could sit as a stranger and read this.
But. You can kind of, some part of your brain knows as you're writing, if I make the O and the M and the S clear, this can have a squiggle in the middle and it's still pretty much ominous. You're not consciously making those choices.
Right.
But that's kind of what your brain and hand are doing, I think. And I think the studies show what you just proved, which is there's not a big legibility difference when they make people print versus write versus mix of both. But mix of both is faster than either print or write.
Right. Mix
and,
of both.
Yeah. And mix of both.
Mm-hmm. That's, but it's it was M named, apostrophe yeah, X.
My middle name was Ixaboth because I'm a demon from the pits of hell.
Ken Ixaboth Jennings.
And often the advantages are said to be the other way, that actually the good thing about cursive is that it slows you down. You know, you're talking about how typing just freed your inner poems about wizards and dragons.
Sure.
There's plenty of research now showing that students who take notes in handwriting, longhand, either printing or writing, they'll retain information better than the people that are typing.
Interesting.
Because typing's just too easy.
Sure.
You're putting less thought into it. Some part of your brain can kind of automatically be a stenographer without having to think about it.
Well, you know, I was a ninth grade Marxist-Leninist, so I was, you know, learning all that stuff, but I didn't really...
You should have loved the Palmer method.
I didn't really retain it.
And there's the argument that it helps fine motor skills. We don't teach sewing and carpentry and stuff anymore in schools. Handwriting was kind of the last thing that taught kids hand-eye coordination, although surely there's Minecraft for that.
Well, let me ask you this. You and I, when we take notes to do our program, both use pen and paper because of reasons, right? I mean, we're both sitting in front of computers. We're looking at things on computers and then making notes on pen and paper.
We're the last generation for sure that will do that until the EMP pulse.
That young people today would look at something on a computer and have a separate sidebar that they were taking notes.
Yeah, the idea that, and even I do, like today I'm going off of typed notes. Sometimes I have handwritten notes. I'm about 50-50.
I'm 100% handwritten notes. If I'm looking at some, this isn't like my dad who printed out all his emails, but like the idea of going between multiple screens for the same task, I just find it easier to like take it out, put it over here.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's just going to be a thing.
Yeah.
A thing I can hold and do the show from. I don't have to tab between it. I think we're the last generation that's going to have to worry about that, except that cursive is kind of making a comeback in recent years and in even months. And so it's become a political punching bag.
It's making a comeback where?
Well, in 2016, a couple southern states, Louisiana and Alabama, you know, some...
Here they go.
Right. Some guy at a Stuckey somewhere found out that his granddaughter didn't know cursive. And
listen, no offense to people
out.
In the South. We love people in the South. We make fun of everyone equally.
But mostly...
But come on.
You guys keep making it so easy. Some guy at a Waffle House finds out his granddaughter doesn't know cursive and flips out on the floor of the Alabama
what
State
the
Senate.
Yappin-derpin-der.
So, like when Louisiana passed a law putting cursive back in the curriculum in 2016, there were cries of America in the chamber.
Oh, nice.
Because it'd be really? Is that
no,
nice?
No, I mean, it's when I say nice, I mean, wow, insane.
Yeah. It becomes tied to patriotism in a weird way, and maybe not the Palmer method. This will turn out our new generation of Americans, but more of a backward looking, now they can read the Declaration of Independence kind of a vibe.
Weird.
You know, like they're going to do the old timey stuff that we did and have our heritage. I don't know if you know this, but in the South, heritage
yes,
means
I see.
Several things.
Right. I understand.
In Alabama, the similar law was called Lexi's Law. And it was literally because some dude had a granddaughter named Lexi who couldn't write cursive and he was flipping out.
So maybe this is why I didn't know which side of the Facebook argument to land on, because I was reading all these comments and was like, wait a minute.
Who is the virtuous side here?
Heritage? Is that what we're really talking about? But it would seem that the transition to not being able to write cursive would be completely ecumenical.
It does not seem ideological.
How
in any
do
way.
You put an ideological spin on it? But I guess that's the great thing about a heritage argument.
Right. It becomes whoever plants the flag first.
Right.
Whoever says, we are the party of, in this case, cursive.
Because the left could just as easily say that cursive is is classist or is exclusionary. It's difficult for immigrants. You know, you could make the exact same.
You could make the opposite argument.
Or the opposite argument.
The Palmer made. Yeah.
Right.
Or his argument. And there's a lot of research on this stuff, but as cursive opponents, if there is such a thing, has pointed out, a lot of this research gets provided to lawmakers and media by Zahner Bloser, the outfit that now produces all the Learn Danielian resources to schools.
It's a company.
Yeah, it's a textbook company,
Zahner Bloser.
Zahner Bloser.
Another demon from the eighth level.
So they're like the evil Tyrell Corporation of the cursive world. There was a failed attempt in Washington a few years ago to get cursive back in schools.
Why did it fail? Nobody cared?
I think on ideological grounds. I see a Republican state senator quoted as saying, part of being an American is being able to read cursive writing. Hmm. Just flatly asserting.
Do you agree?
Something that seems to be a little nuts, but okay. And once you've done that, you've drawn the culture war line.
Right.
And then all the good Democrats have to be like, well, actually, in the modern age, typing, computers, digital children of tomorrow.
Is there nothing that cannot be politicized?
It is sad. Because I kind of see both. I feel like it should be up to the kid. Like if a kid enjoys
beautiful
cursive letters.
You cannot leave it up to second graders, right? Because none of them would learn their times tables either. Like you do.
They would just have Jolly Ranchers stuck in their hair. You can't let second graders decide what to do.
The thing is, I'm always trying to teach her that she does need to learn to add in her head. She does need to learn to memorize her times tables because you don't always have a calculator.
Oh, John.
That concludes Cursive, entry 307.DA508, certificate number 32892 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that you are consuming this show transcribed into the Spencerian cursive.
Why would we do that?
Well, it wouldn't be us.
You don't think we're going to leave it scratched on a gold record in cursive?
I think we're going to leave it however we leave it. But 400 years from now, the Patriots, or 4,000 years from now,
the sons of the white cursive America.
Yeah, right. The marmosets that decided that cursive was the thing, all transcribed every omnibus into Spencerian cursive as a part of their heritage.
Do you remember when you could, at the end of a TV show, you could order a transcript of the TV show? Do you remember that?
You could, for a transcript, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Jeopardy.
I don't think it was Jeopardy, but it was certainly like Larry King Live or whatever would send you a printout of their show for some reason.
Well, what's incredible is if it was so easy to do, why are there not transcripts of every episode of the Omnibus? There should be. It should be a giant tome.
That's the service we should put. We should find whoever was doing it for Larry King Live in the late 80s. They probably have some free time now. And they can be in charge of producing a cursive Spencerian version of every entry.
That does seem unlikely, but it's entirely possible, future marmosets, that you are you're reading this transcript, and in which case you cannot hear how my voice is soothing and deep and resonant, and Ken's voice is like that of a marmoset.
Maybe yours is in beautiful Spencerian and mine is in
chicken scratch.
Workmanlike Palmer method. You can tell the capital Qs. I'm sorry, the capital Qs are so ugly. We will try not to do any shows about anyone named Quentin or Quimby.
My Qs are quite beautiful. You can come yell at us or love us, shower us with praise at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Omnibus Project. You can go to at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick to enjoy our witticisms. You can come hang out with me on Instagram and see how I'm letting my beard grow right now at this moment in your distant past. I think it ages me. Do you think it ages me? The longer my beard gets, do you think I look older?
No, someone with a very long beard looks super young to me. Mm-hmm.
Long gray beard?
Like Gandalf, for example. Like, what is that guy, like 26 tops?
Please email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Go to our Facebook fan group, The Omnibus Futurelings, where there will be thread after thread devoted to cursive writing as soon as this show is aired, or airs.
Arguments about it, probably.
A lot of arguments. A lot of people saying, ma, and other people going, her, and then there'll be one guy that's like, why do they disparage the South? please email us copies of your own cursive, except that one guy who keeps sending us beautifully calligraphied letters.
Yeah, this show is all the encouragement he needs to get another three or four of those in the mail.
He writes us beautiful letters that are joke angry letters, right? Like yes. That you would write to Delta Airlines.
I want him to start doing the thing where, do you remember in old timey letters because paper was scarce, they would write in checkerboard fashion, like they would write vertical lines crossing the horizontal lines of text. Have you ever seen this?
No.
Yeah, in old timey letters, to reuse paper, you would write a series of horizontal lines and then you would write vertically as well, crossing them. And the idea is you could turn the paper and read the vertical ones as well.
I guess I have seen this, but I do not see how it would work.
It's been gone for 100 years. At the vertices, it can get a little weird.
Yeah, I see.
But generally, your eye can just get used to the horizontals, ignore the stripes.
Right.
And by turning the page, you get twice the paper.
Oh, the paper shortages of yore.
So if papers are, if there's another paper shortage in your time and you're back to cursive, I would try that.
If you want to send us something, if you want to send us copies of your long-dead grandparents' Spencerian love letters, you can do so to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. The fact that we're fighting over things like cursive handwriting is not a hopeful sign.
No, it suggests we're at the end times.
We hope and pray the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this very recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.